It happened, Wendy. It happened.
I knew it would.
Friday's here, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's the day you look forward to all week. It's Friday, the best day ever invented. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. Thank you so much for listening. Participate at any point during the show by calling us or texting us at 312-981-7200.
Perfect. Are you enjoying the fall weather? Because I can't tell you how beautiful all these trees are.
You're just noticing that today, the beauty of the trees?
Well, it's been starting, but now it's really coming into full bloom.
Mm-hmm.
I love autumn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an autumnal kind of girl.
That's your season?
You don't like it because you know what's on the other side of it.
It's my least favorite of the four.
Really?
My least favorite. Yeah.
I've never heard that from anyone.
It's because I know the weather's not going to be nice again until June, and that's too long for me.
That's even pushing it. Sometimes not until
July. Yeah. I also, even though I haven't been in school for years and years and years, I feel like I should be studying for a phonics test. I know there's a phonics test sneaking up on me, and I know it's an important part of my grade, Mary, so I want to do my best.
Phonics. Oh, haven't heard that word in a long time.
What is that? Just how things sound?
Yeah, wasn't phonics.
You had a phonics test?
Mary was hooked on phonics for a while.
Did you mean physics? On phonics, yeah.
She couldn't help herself. She had to take phonics methadone to come down off of it. It was horrible.
Before my spelling bees.
Right. Right. I think you only get phonics classes, if I'm not mistaken, in like first, second, third, and fourth grade. I think for some reason they stop teaching it. They go, he either gets it or he doesn't get it. So we'll give it to you for a couple of years, and then you're on your own.
I think it's gone away just like
there is no more phonics?
There's no more penmanship or phonics.
How will we learn our murmur diphthongs?
What in God's name are you talking about?
Is that
a character that Ernie Kovacs did?
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
It does.
That was some... all I remember is it was some blend of consonants. That's all I remember.
What is this called?
Murmur diphthongs. Which, by the way, it's too cold to wear outside. If you have a pair of murmur diphthongs, wait a couple of weeks.
I used to wear thongs on my feet.
Right, that's right. Before the bathing suit industry changed.
Right. Now, try wearing that on your feet, Mary, and see what the results are.
Oh, my.
Yeah, you get a lot of attention at the beach.
All the toe separators in the same spot.
Are you looking it up?
Murmur diphthongs are vowels with an R. So A-R-E-R-O-R-I-R-E-I-E-I-O.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Like R and and I-R.
Yeah.
And OR.
I use those every day. I didn't know what they were. I have to be more mindful of that.
Well, now I'm confused.
But they would teach you in phonics class, they would teach you that, and then there was heavy emphasis on consonant blends, like how to say certain consonants together. Like I remember it was, like they'd go, street, eat, like that, and we would all just nod and go, all right, if you want us to say it that way, we'll say it that way.
I learned that on the electric company, remember?
Yeah. There was...
Ong. Thong.
Right, right.
But how come people weren't taught the correct way to say street? Because it is street, but you hear a lot of people say street. Whenever there's an ST,
yeah.
For some reason, people put an H there.
Right.
So like, you are so strong.
Is that a Midwest
thing? I don't know. I'm from the Midwest. I don't do it.
I'm trying to think of who I hear say that mostly. I do hear people say it, but I'm not sure who it is.
A lot of reporters I hear on the air say.
Why is that? Because they're supposed to be speaking the Queen's English. How come they're saying it that way? That's disappointing.
Yeah, I don't know. Hmm. And then we had this thing when we were, I think it was first grade. I think it was called ITA. And they were little symbols that were kind of like phonics because it would give you the, let me give you an example. Like if you spelled the word braid, it would be B-R and then there was an A and an E connected, which was like braid.
But they weren't suggesting that we replace our letters with that.
No,
it was just a way to learn it.
Yes.
Right?
To understand the sound of it.
Couldn't you make the argument, though, that at that point where you're just trying to get a grasp of what the letters are and what they do, that might be counterproductive?
Yes.
That might teach you things that you don't need to know yet.
I still spell things with the A and E connected, and nobody knows what I'm talking about.
It looked like a European, like they threw in a European letter just to see if you were paying attention.
Yeah.
But I do remember that. And what was that called?
I don't know why.
ITE, did you say?
ITA.
What does that stand for?
I was only in first grade. Like, I'm supposed to remember this?
I kind of do remember it, but I don't remember it being referred to as ITA, but maybe different school systems taught it differently.
Well, you went to a Catholic school.
Yeah.
Initial teaching alphabet.
Oh. So you still used your basic 26, but they would throw in a couple of wild cards.
Well, they weren't letters. They were just trying to show you, like,
the way it should be pronounced.
Yes, exactly.
Was that helpful?
That's the only one I remember is the A and E connected.
But there were more, right?
Oh, yes. There were two E's with a line over it, like long E. Like ski would be spelled S-K-E-E with the long line over it.
I just wonder, though, if you're a kid and you're just learning how to use the language and how to spell things, if that's not more than you need to know at that point. Right?
Well, I think they're just telling you how to pronounce words. And
maybe.
Then you... Because I can spell. I'm a great speller. Mm-hmm. So I would really do well at a spelling bee. They never had that, really, mm-hmm. that I was aware of growing up. But the only thing is my vocabulary is so minute that I can spell things, but I don't know what I've just spelled.
Oh. We had spelling bees sporadically. We didn't have them often, but we had them once in a while. But one time, keep in mind, it was a Catholic school, so we had religion class. So we had a religion bee, and all the boys lined up on one side, and all the girls lined up on the other side, and they would ask, you know, like
Bible trivia.
It was that, and right before it came to me, it was a kid in front of me, Stephen Baker, and he was about to answer, and it was a question that I just sat down. I didn't even get the question. I was just next to him going, why even embarrass myself? I just sat down. And the teacher goes, don't you want the question? I'm not going to know the answer to this question.
Boy, that's not like you.
No, I'm very competitive.
What was it called?
It was a religion bee.
Why wasn't it the Bible bee?
Oh, that would have been so... I would have stayed up for that.
I can't believe they let you sit down.
Right.
It wasn't a nun, was it?
Yes, it was a nun.
She let you sit down?
Yeah, because she knew. You know.
She should have hit you with the ruler and said, at least give it a try.
That's what I would get.
What kind of Christian are you?
Just for the record, not all nuns hit with rulers.
Sister Martina did.
Some of them had other weaponry.
A yardstick, maybe?
Yardsticks, nunchucks. Remember those? That's why they're called that. That was standard issue at our school. All right, we'll take a break. We've got plenty more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I'm distracted by you today because you have new glasses on and you look actually handsome.
Well, first of all, thank you. You're wrong. These are not my glasses. I had to switch cars. My car is in the shop. I always have a regular pair of glasses and a pair of spare
reading glasses
in the other car. And I took my wife's car today.
Are those her glasses?
No, these are a friend of hers.
They look good on you.
Thank you.
Very distracting. I'm not used to you looking so handsome.
They don't work properly for me. They're somebody else's glasses. So
they're not strong enough.
I don't know if you heard during the GWC read. I couldn't. There's letters that just don't register with these glasses. So prepare yourself for a day of hijinks.
Excellent. I can't wait.
Good.
We were talking about language and words, and I started DVRing Jeopardy when that guy was on. I can't remember his name.
Jamie Holzhauer.
Yes.
He was fantastic.
And I have forgotten to take it off our recordings.
Oh, so it's taping every day for
you.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd have a little fun yesterday and watch a few back-to-back episodes.
You binge-watched Jeopardy yesterday?
Well, I only watched one of three that we had because I felt bad for Alex Trebek.
Oh, no.
They had the introduction where they said, this person is a sound audio engineer from Hollywood, California.
Yeah.
And they announced his name. Everybody had a little thing like that.
Sure.
And then Alex went up to him and said, hi, thank you. Let's get started. It'll be better if I don't talk very much. His voice is very weak.
Oh, no.
It really broke my heart. And Alex Trebek is saying now that he regrets going public with his cancer battle. He said he has some regrets about going public with his pancreatic cancer battle, says he's nearing the end of his life.
Oh, no.
Trebek reflected on this illness in a recent interview with CTV.
Canadian television.
Okay, thank you. During which he told journalist Lisa LaFlamme, the thought of the pancreatic cancer does not frighten me. And she asked him, you're not afraid of dying? And he said, no, not afraid of dying. I'm 79 years old. Hey, I've lived a good life, a full life, and I'm nearing the end of that life. I know that. I'm not going to delude myself. So if it happens, it happens.
Oh, I hate to hear every part of that.
I know. And just watching him with this very, you could tell when he said hello that his voice was kind of, it's just very weak. And when he came right out with no explanation and just said, okay, let's get right to the game. It's better if I don't do a lot of talking.
Well, they don't do the interviews at the beginning. It's always just kind of the setting up of the game and the rules, and then they get into it. And then it's after a commercial break, they come back and you meet. You get a minute and a half with each of the contestants.
I didn't watch that.
You didn't see that deep?
No, I just felt so bad. You could really tell that it was just really kind of an effort to speak. His voice is raspy.
Yeah.
And I just felt really sorry for him.
Oh, I don't like hearing. I knew that he had the cancer, and then it went into remission, and then he announced about a month ago, 5 weeks ago, that it has come back.
And that's what he regrets, is that, because pancreatic cancer, if you know, usually is not usually cured.
Yeah, right.
And he came and said he was in remission,
right.
And, you know, it did give everyone a false sense of hope,
yeah,
including himself. I just feel really terrible.
So I wonder, when he says he regrets going public, if he had to do it over again, would he just then just stop doing the show? Like, I know how beloved he is, and I know, you know, how could you not wish him anything but the best? And I thought it was a very brave move to come forward. But then I guess, you know, people are seeing you every day, and, you know, he's going to go downhill a little bit because of the illness. So I wonder if he just would have stopped doing the show at some point, if that's his regret.
He said he kept hosting Jeopardy through treatment and in August announced his return for a new season of the show, saying he was, quote, on the mend,
yeah,
and that he was finished with chemotherapy. However, Trebek said last month that he would resume chemotherapy after his test results had deteriorated dramatically and quickly.
Yeah.
The beloved TV host said in his recent interview that he has now started the second round of chemotherapy and that he and his team would keep exploring treatment options until we either win or lose.
Mm.
Trebek explained that he's been able to keep working on the set of Jeopardy despite the toll that cancer has taken on his physical health, because he gets energized each time announcer Johnny Gilbert introduces him for a new episode. Eventually, though, Trebek said he may end his 3-decade tenure on the game show if his performance suffers to the point that he's bothered by it.
Yeah.
I will keep hosting as long as my skills do not diminish, and they have started to diminish, and I really noticed that.
Oh, that's all. That's horrible news.
I talk to the producers about it all the time. I say, look, I'm slurring my words. My tongue doesn't work as well as it used to. The chemo has caused sores inside my mouth. It makes it difficult for me to speak and enunciate properly. I notice these things, and I'm sure there are observant members of the television audience who notice also.
Well, wouldn't you agree that nearly everybody who's watching knows what he's going through and is sympathetic to the cause, and probably more than willing, even if he's slurring a little bit? I know it's a game show and every syllable counts,
mm-hmm.
but don't you think anybody watching is giving him the benefit of the doubt, saying, you know,
he's sick?
Do this, yeah, do it as long as you can do it, please.
Alex Trebek has been outspoken about his illness and his treatment ever since his announcement in March, something he now says he partially regrets. Mm. Here's a quote from him. He said, there are moments when I have some regrets about having gone public with it, because I think I'm being, well, there's a little too much of Alex Trebek out there, and I regret that. He explained that a lot of people have been coming to him for help and reassurance, adding, I don't know if I'm strong enough or intelligent enough to help alleviate some of that despair. Jeopardy, currently in its 36th season, remains hosted by Trebek until he can't do it anymore.
You know, it reminds me to some extent, we've had a couple of high-profile people who over the years have gotten the word that they have cancer or another illness that is going to claim them. And then you see, actually, Michael Landon called it his farewell tour. I don't know if you remember this, but Michael Landon would show up on all the talk shows and referred to it openly as his farewell tour, which made it even harder. But it's always so emotional when you see these people that, you know, you grew up with, you watched for years and years, like Alex Trebek, and everyone realizes the same thing. I mean, we all know our days are finite. We're not going to last forever. But when
we're
you
not?
See them, no. You see them for what is probably going to be the last time. It's so emotional. You know who else was like that? And boy, was this crushing. Was Warren Zevon.
I was just going to say that, because do you remember his advice to everyone?
No, what was it?
Enjoy every sandwich.
Yeah, right. It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a time, you know, he was a frequent guest on David Letterman's show, a frequent musical guest. David Letterman was a huge fan of Warren Zevon. So when it became apparent that Warren didn't have much time, he brought him on, and he spent, I don't remember if it was the whole show, I seem to think it was nearly the whole hour, And it was so riveting, and you just, there were so many emotions because you're seeing this guy again for what will probably be the last time, and then it turned out to be the last time. And it is no holds barred, because what have you got to lose? You're honest, you know, you're watching somebody who's just, you know, the sands of time are running out on. And it's so hard to watch, but I guess it's kind of important sometimes to see that, you know?
Our
hearts go out to Alex Trebek, certainly.
It also shows at that point that celebrities are just like
we are.
Cancer doesn't discriminate.
All right, a break, some news, a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Deck yourself with flu protection. La, 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 la. Take the time for vaccination.
That's lovely.
Oh, that's beautiful, Wendy.
It is that time of the year, and people have been talking about flu shots, and it's very important that we get our flu shots by the end of October. So on the line with us right now is Dr. Marielle Frachon, Medical Director of the Immunization Program with the Chicago Department of Public Health. Hi, Dr. Frachon.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. I have a confession to make. Jasmine said, hey, we got to do this flu shot thing. Tell people we really need to do it. Do you want Dr. Frachon to come in and administer shots? And I said, no, I feel like, how does that help the listener? And then so many people in our office have come up saying, are you guys giving away free flu shots today? Can we come and do it? So I feel really bad. Next year, we want you to come and inject us. But I went and got
mine.
Yes. I went and got mine yesterday. My husband has asthma, so I said, please get in there today because flu shots are running low at some of the places. But it's important to do it by the end of October. Why is that?
We're really saying, yeah, get your flu vaccine by Halloween, because Australia had a really bad season this year, and it was a lot earlier, and it was a pretty scary season over there. So the CDC is telling us get it sooner rather than later this year. And again, we can never predict when it's going to hit here in the U.S., but better safe than sorry.
And there was someone in our office, Sarah, who said, oh, flu shot's coming today. I said, no, it's my fault. Sorry. But you can go to your pharmacy. There's Walgreens or CVS. And also, if you don't have a doctor, you can get, how can you do a walk-up? You call 311?
Actually, we have on chicago.gov/flu.
Okay.
We have our 25 flu clinics that are left. We did about 80 this year. And even this weekend, we have the 35th ward and the 4th ward on Saturday that we're doing.
So that's chicago.gov/flu.
/flu.
And the question from Sarah was, I've never had a flu shot before. I've never really had a problem. Why should I get one now?
Well, it takes 2 weeks for you to be protected. And we're getting really good studies out now about how it reduces your risk of hospitalization by half. And if you have any other health issues, it prevents death by almost 70%. So in kids, it saves kids every year from dying. And the scariest thing as a pediatrician, really, is when you hear about a kid who dies from flu who didn't get their flu shot. And so it's really important to me and for everybody's families to be healthy, and then also to protect those who can't get flu shots. So that's why it's important for everyone.
Dr. Frachon, it was mentioned about a shortage of vaccine. Why would there be a shortage of vaccine? They know the flu is coming. They know people are going to get the shots. Why would a shortage play into this?
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. Because we're really pushing for people to get it earlier, we're running across this issue of it not being in stock places.
Yeah.
It's actually not abnormal for the flu vaccine to have a slow delivery in the early fall, and then you get more of it into the office in November. The manufacturers just need time to get the amount out there.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, high-dose flu vaccine is lagging behind the other types of flu vaccine this year. So even at our clinics, we haven't been able to give the high-dose flu vaccine because we're waiting on the manufacturer. But now, actually, Walgreens is starting to stock it. Other pharmacies are getting it. And we also now have it at our walk-in clinics.
So
it's mostly because we're promoting it earlier.
And also explain the correlation between Australia and here. You said Australia had a rough season, so we're more than likely going to have a rough season. What's the tie-in? I don't understand it.
Yeah, so in the Southern Hemisphere, you know, they have winter when we have summer. So they get their flu season first. And it doesn't always match up, but a lot of times we end up having a similar season to what they do just because of international travel, et cetera. So this year, the flu vaccine has two different types of flu A in it. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that that sort of small change in those types will help us be better protected this year with this year's shot.
There's a couple people that I'm friends with, and on my Facebook feed, they are putting, you know, don't get the flu shot. It's only going to make you sick. You know, we had flus when we were growing up. It never killed us. It's not going to kill you now. What do you say to those people?
Flu can absolutely kill people. 2 years ago, it killed about 80,000 people, which is, it was a really scary flu season. And with the data we have, we know that if it could keep you out of the hospital, which one of us would not take, you know, a pill in October to keep us out of the hospital? I think it makes a lot of sense. And then I also tell people that the flu shot, there isn't a way for it to give you the flu from a biological perspective. It's a killed, inactivated protein that's in there, and it can't give you influenza. But this year, you know, I am hearing just anecdotally that people are getting, they're feeling more achy. It hurts a little bit more. And you do get, you know, you feel a little bit sick within the first 2 days. And that's fine. You know, we have to accept that our bodies are making protection, and you might feel, you know, a little bit sick the first 2 days, but then you'll be protected for the rest of the season.
And most susceptible are people with compromised immune systems, older people and younger kids, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Anyone under the age of 5, anyone over the age of 65. And then if you have any other heart, lung, any other chronic diseases, it's so important for you to get your flu shot.
It can't hurt you. I mean, that's all I have to say. My arm is killing me, so actually right. It does hurt me. I got it yesterday. Someone says, I have a cold right now. Can I still get a flu shot?
Absolutely. You have to be pretty sick when you come to my office not to get a flu shot, because it doesn't hurt you if you get the flu shot when you're sick. It's just that your body can't give as good protection if your body's fighting another virus, for example. But it won't hurt you to get it, and it'll protect you from a much worse viral infection, which is influenza.
Are we understanding this correctly, Dr. Frischone? There's a lot of people out there that are very afraid of needles. They're very brave people, but they are afraid of needles. The spray,
like you.
Like me.
Yeah, next year, Bill, I
the
think.
The spray is back in next year. Is that true or not true?
So this year, yeah, the nasal spray, it should be available.
Oh, this year.
You might have to call around to find it.
Yeah.
And it's being recommended at the same level as the shot. They fixed the vaccine, and the data is better. And so we're recommending it at the same level as the shot.
What about gummy bear form? Is it in gummy bear form yet?
Not yet.
Oh, if I could invent that, I would.
All right.
You should work
on it.
Yes, you would. So I heard that the nasal spray, you know, it was originally for babies or Bill. And
I'm okay with that. That should insult me, but it doesn't.
But, you know, he was over the age of where it would be effective, but they've changed that. And I thought next year, but what should we do? Just call around to see if they are offering the nasal flu vaccine?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a delay again with the manufacturers with the nasal spray version. So, yeah, call ahead to your doctor and see if they have it.
And it's equally as effective? It's no less or more, no more effective as a nasal spray?
So that's a really great question, and the data is pretty complicated because depending on the strain, each vaccine has its own effectiveness. So for some strains, it's going to be a little bit better or worse depending mm-hmm. on the depending on the shot. But this year, based off of last year's data, they're saying that it should give you the same level of protection.
Oh, good. All right.
All right. She is Dr. Marielle Frischone, Medical Director of the Immunization Program with the Chicago Department of Public Health. Please, even if I don't invite you, will you come give us shots next year? Because I feel bad that I deprived some of my coworkers of the flu shot this year. And if people
I'll show up unannounced.
All right. Perfect.
That's fine.
It's no big deal. And you can go to chicago.gov/flu and find out if you don't have insurance. You can find out where to go to a walk-in immunization clinic. But if you do have insurance, mine was free. I didn't pay for it.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
Stay in good health. I hope you don't get the flu. Wouldn't that be ironic? And work on those gummy bear flu vaccinations.
Please, work around the clock on that.
I will.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Frischone. Have a great weekend.
Chicago.gov/flu. If you don't have insurance, you can find out where to get a free flu shot. It doesn't hurt. It can only help. We're here to help you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Do you want me to say something? I got nothing to say. I do know that today is a very special day for you, isn't it?
It is. Jimmy Mack and I got married 22 years ago today.
22 years ago.
You were there.
I don't remember it at all. Does it seem like 22 years to you? It
honestly
doesn't, right? It goes by very, very fast.
It does. I mean, I thought once we hit double digits, so when we hit 10 years being married, I'm like, ah, we finally did it.
Yeah, right.
And then hitting 20 years was pretty impressive.
Yes.
And now, you know, maybe for our silver anniversary, we can take a trip together because maybe the boys can handle themselves by then.
We'll see. We'll
they
see
should be 30, so.
It'll play out differently, maybe.
But I came up with 22 words that describe my husband, Jimmy Mack, for our 22 years we've spent together.
A word per year.
Yes.
That's very, this is, I haven't heard the words yet, but this is very romantic.
Well, I'm going to put it on Facebook, but I wanted to run it past you
first.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And see if you agree.
Is it the word for each, like, is it the first word, the word that reminded you of him the most that first year? Or is it just random?
Just 22.
Just
come on.
Random 22 words.
That would have taken way too much thought.
All right. That's true.
I just figured a word for each year we've been married.
All right.
First one, cute.
Yeah. Yep.
Funny.
Cute and funny. Were those two of the things that drew you to him the most originally?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
Sexy's number three.
No. Mm-hmm.
Fun.
Yeah.
Authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Loyal.
Mm-hmm.
Strong.
Yeah. I can't debate any of these.
I know you can't.
It's impossible to debate these.
Smart.
Yeah.
Passionate. I was thinking of his love for Star Wars.
Or his love for you. But you can't put him in that order.
No. Protective.
Right?
He's very protective of his family. Loving.
Yes.
Great personality.
That's two words. Do you count that as two words
or one?
Well,
here's the thing. I that's why I wanted to run this past you. So what do I just put? Outgoing?
You're trying to replace great personality?
Yeah.
I think personality, right?
Okay.
Great is understood. I don't think you have to put great. It's just personality, right?
Loves music. I didn't know. I was going to. I know.
That's two.
I was going to put musical, and he does play a little guitar.
That sounds like he bursts into song. Has he ever just burst into song?
Not.
Has he ever burst into flames?
That is coming up.
That's crazy when he does that. Although, always have a marshmallow ready.
All right, so I need just single words. Creative?
Yeah, he's creative. No
good
question.
Hugger?
I wouldn't know that, but I'll take it for it.
But again, two words.
That's again, yeah, you're right on the threshold there with the two words. And you can't just put hugger. Because that sounds like he's just hugging people at random. Where's Jimmy? I don't know. There he is. He's hugging somebody. I don't know who that is.
Captivating.
Yes, that's the word. That would have been the first word I came up with for him. Captivating.
Adventurous. Much more so than myself.
Is he? Is he more adventurous than you are?
He climbed a mountain when he was in
California.
Did
he really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's impressive. He's very adventurous.
Supportive.
Yeah.
Here's another two-word one. Loves dogs. That's important to me.
Is there some way to shave that down to just one? I just think the judges aren't going to let you get through with all these two-word answers.
Quirky. He's quirky.
But that, I think that's one of his best traits, right?
Me too.
Quirky's good. Quirky's so good.
See, I was proud to come up with that one.
That's a great one.
Determined.
Yeah.
And then that's 21, so I had one more to come up with, and I'll never forget. My mom never really liked any of my boyfriends I had. And, you know, we got married, and my mom really started liking Jim, and the best compliment that she ever said to him is we were at our beach club, and he was walking out of the water, and my mom said, "He sure has straight legs." So that's the last one.
I know that's another two-word answer, but
that
I
has
think
to be
you
included.
Have to include that one. Even at the risk of losing another word.
I know. And now that he's got nice legs. He has
straight
legs.
Straight legs.
Who were you
dating before Jimmy?
A cowboy? Or a swashbuckler?
The first time I met Terry's mother, I met her mother and three of her sisters all on the same day. We had lunch with them. And Terry's mother's assessment was, I like Bill. He makes me laugh so hard my face hurts.
Well, that's a great compliment.
I think it is. But when you first hear it, you feel I made somebody's face hurt. That you know that has a negative.
Way.
I guess so. It took a while for me to realize that was a good thing, but I'd take straight legs anytime. That is a huge compliment.
All right, Frank, you did a similar thing for your anniversary.
Yeah, it's just about the same number as the 23rd, and I did a crossword puzzle.
Oh, that's better. Darn it!
How romantic is that?
That's
huh?
So. Is your wife a crossword enthusiast? I hope.
No.
She's
it's
not.
Something fun to do. You know, it's something special. You could go to the store and buy a gift, but making it up.
So she's personal.
Still asking about why haven't I ever done that again?
There's actually a crossword generator. You can go online and punch in the words, and it'll make things up.
That's so romantic.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do for tonight's dinner.
What was her reaction to this crossword puzzle that she was the star of? Did she love it?
Oh, she cries at anything. Those are tears. Her nose gets wet, and I say, oh, she's going to cry, and she cried.
Well, happy anniversary, Frank. We appreciate your calling.
Happy anniversary to you and to Jimmy and Chuck E. Cheese tonight. Where are you guys heading?
I think that's where we're going.
So romantic. All right, a break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And the news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Jen, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. On Fridays, we talk to Alex Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. He's here right now. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fine. I know that we talk TV with you, Alex. I know you're not a gossip columnist per se, but maybe you know a little something about this. What do all the ladies in Hollywood and New York see in Pete Davidson? What exactly is going on there?
Let me tell you about hot Pete. No, I don't see it. I don't understand it.
Wendy, what is it?
I don't know what it is, but I absolutely love him. I was watching him on SNL last weekend, and I go, I love him. And my husband goes, why?
Yeah.
Not criticizing, but just saying why.
He's funny. There's no question about it.
I think he's adorable. I feel bad for him. I feel I could help him. He seems fun.
That's what it is.
I think
that every woman... And the age range is spectacular. I'll get into that in a second. But every woman who comes near him has, I think, Wendy, what you just said, I can come to his aid. I can make things better for him, for Pete Davidson. What do you think, Alex? True or not true?
Well, I don't think they can make things better for Pete Davidson. But I do think that's what it is. He has a very cute, precocious young face. He has those big eyes, and he always looks so happy about everything.
Yeah.
But it seems like, it would be nice to hang out with him. We'd have a nice time.
Yeah.
I could really dress him in some nice clothes and clean up his hair.
Yeah.
But it never happens.
He's now dating Cindy Crawford's daughter. You know this, right?
I know you're just jealous of him. That's not it.
It's not jealousy.
Who's Who list is pretty impressive.
In the last couple of years, he has dated Larry David's daughter, Cassie. Then after that, it was Ariana Grande. Then after that, it was Kate Beckinsale. Then it was Andy McDowell's daughter, who's an actress.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Quali.
Yeah. Yeah. Margaret Qualley,
who
that's
was
her
in,
name.
She was Pussycat in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
And now it's Cindy Crawford's daughter. That's an interesting couple of years.
It feels like he's trying to do some sort of weird celebrity bingo card or something like that. I don't know.
Yes. Yes.
He is not well. He suffers from depression. He smokes a lot of weed. He has Crohn's disease. He's not doing very well. I mean,
not according to that list I just read, Wendy.
Well, I just...
And I left some names off. Betty White for a while.
I could actually see that. That one would last.
Yes. Yes. So there's some magic to him. You know who he reminds me of? Remember the guy that was on That 70s Show?
Topher Grace?
No.
Masterson?
No, the guy who dated... Yeah, that guy who dated...
Wilderama. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I think something that joins them together, not to take it too seriously, but they both come off as very nice guys, and everything that we've heard about both of them is that people just really like spending time with them.
Yes.
So that's ultimately what it comes down to. That's what love is all about.
Is that
both sound jealous now.
Alex, be honest. Are we jealous? We're not jealous. We're just concerned.
No, you're curious.
I'm very happy with my life. I'm fine. I'm not jealous.
God, Cindy Crawford's daughter has a name, first of all.
It's just Cindy Crawford's daughter.
And she's just beautiful because she looks
just like Cindy Crawford. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Well, good for him. I hope
good
it lasts.
Good for him. Daybreak, Alex. What is Daybreak? And can I watch it with Pete Davidson? Would he come to my house and watch that with me?
He would love it. He would love to sit down, hold your hand, make you some popcorn. Daybreak is a new series that actually hit on Netflix on Thursday. They're starting to move around the release schedule a little bit. It's still crazy packed that they release on Fridays, but they're starting to release shows on Thursdays and Wednesdays, et cetera, et cetera. This one is a bizarre zombie apocalypse series. The idea is that a bomb drops on Greendale in California and turns all of the adults into zombies, but all the teens are left alive, and they immediately turn it into this Mad Max futuristic wasteland. Matthew Broderick is in it. He's the principal of a high school in flashbacks, and it basically plays off of that and is sort of like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but with zombies.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre. I honestly didn't love the first episode. I watched the first episode of it, but I did appreciate the ambition of it.
Yeah.
And I think particularly for that, it feels, if you want to watch Matthew Broderick in a weird zombie comedy,
maybe
worth checking out just for that.
I like Matthew Broderick.
Is this influenced in any way by Riverdale? I know it's a little bit of a stretch, but sometimes shows that have the teenage point of view remind me of each other. Is that kind of similar to Riverdale or not?
This is actually based on a comic, a very little-known comic that not a lot of people read. But I think, to your point, there was a couple of years ago after Riverdale Season 1 debuted on the CW, it did okay. You know, it was a little bit of a sensation, but it bubbled under the surface. Then it went on Netflix, and it went huge on Netflix. And then the second season actually doubled the ratings from the first season. And I think what's happened since then is not only is the CW and other broadcast networks trying to reproduce Riverdale, but Netflix has very actively said, okay, we're going to make our own Riverdale. And they have a lot of shows like that. So to your point, Daybreak actually features Cody Kearsley, who played Moose Mason on Riverdale in one of the main roles. So I think that's very apt. Like, it's not the same concept. It's not the same feel. But they're definitely trying to go for that audience that if you watched Riverdale, maybe you'll like this as well.
I saw that there's a new teaser for season 2 of Umbrella Academy. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, we don't really have much news of it yet, but they are actively filming it and developing it. Presumably it should be on sometime next year. And that was a pretty huge hit for Netflix, and I think it's one that's only going to build as it goes into the second season.
All right, I need you to go back to gossip columnist once again for me. Put the TV hat aside and go with the gossip columnist hat for just a second. Last night was the season premiere of Will and Grace. I thought it was very, very funny. I've always enjoyed the show. I thought they picked up right where they left off. But now I'm reading today that Megan Mullally is no longer going to be a part of the show, or she's taken a brief sabbatical. There's been rumors that she's fighting with other cast members. What do you know about this?
Yeah, she's going to be missing out on two of the episodes in season 11. Certainly, a lot of folks are tying that to the rumors of the behind-the-scenes feud that she's potentially having with Deborah Messing. We don't really know many of the details. They're not being very open about it. But certainly, that seems to be the closest tie that you can make, because otherwise, why would she be leaving for those episodes?
Right.
It's a show with four people on it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see. Regardless, the show is wrapping up. She's going to be there for the majority of the episodes, and she should be there for the final season as
okay.
well.
That's solid news. All right. We'll take a quick break. Back with Alex Zelbin in just a second, the managing editor of Decider.com, and quite the gossip columnist, we're finding out. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions or comments. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leffin and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alex Zelbin. Comes on Friday and talks about television, what's going on in the world of TV. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. BoJack Horseman, Alex, what is that? Mm-hmm. Where is that?
BoJack Horseman is an animated comedy on Netflix. It's actually entering its sixth and final season, the first half of which dropped today. The second half won't come on until January, I believe. It's phenomenal if you never checked it out. It comes from, well, actually, wouldn't know any of the creators of BoJack Horseman, but it's about a depressed horse in Hollywood who formerly was a huge TV star back in the 80s, sort of like on a Phil House style show, and is trying to recapture his fame now. There's very precise, very weird Hollywood commentary throughout. It deals very actively with depression and mental illness as well, which I know doesn't sound very funny, but it's also one of the funniest, weirdest, most creative shows on television. Do yourself a favor, check it out. It gets more and more bizarre as it goes on, but also has these incredible stunt episodes where, for example, last season there was an episode that all took place at a funeral, and it's an animated show, but it was all one scene and basically one shot the entire time.
Wow.
So they play with things that way, too, and it really just blows your mind when they get to an episode like that. I've seen this first half of the season. It's as good as anything else they've done, but still remains funny even here at the end. It's great. Can't recommend it highly enough.
One more time, that's BoJack Horseman on Netflix, and the first half of the final season is dropping today. All right, this is great because here's an actress, Catherine Hahn, who you see in stuff, And you go, I don't know who that is. I think I've seen her before. I have no idea who that is. What did I see her in the past? She is so funny. She's so great at what she does. And she finally has her own show on HBO. It's Mrs. Fletcher. What's going on with this show?
Yeah, this is great because, as you mentioned, there's a lot of people who are huge fans of her, but this is really her chance to shine on a big HBO show. It's debuting Sunday at 10:30 p.m. It's in their comedy block, so it's going to be paired with Silicon Valley, comes back for its final season at 10 p.m. And the idea of the show is that Catherine Hahn is a single mother who's finally sending her kid off to college. And the show sort of goes half and half as he is exploring his sexuality and his independence as he goes off to college. She's doing the same thing alone in her house for the first time since she had her kid. Our reviewer was a little mixed about it, and I've seen mostly mixed reviews, but Catherine Hahn is reliably fantastic. Her half of the story is fantastic. The kid's story doesn't quite work as well, but it's certainly one of those things that because HBO gets all in on series, I think it's going to be worth checking out and following over the course of the season.
Do you know who she is, Wendy? Catherine Hahn?
She's from here. Yes, I love her.
Oh, she's so good.
But now, you said someone watched it and had a critique on it. Does that writer of yours on Decider.com have a son who's leaving for college? Because maybe it's like it's not hitting home to her. Because I think I'm going to love this.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way of looking at it. Certainly, it's going to hit people differently if you are a 40-something single mother or 40-something mother who's had to say goodbye to her kids. And again, it's worth checking out, I think, just for Catherine Hahn. And, you know, a ridiculous reason to check out a show, but to support her and make it a hit so she can do more stuff because she's so great.
And that's Mrs. Fletcher on HBO. I'm going to watch that. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Alex.
Does her character have an affair with Pete Davidson at any point?
I'm just curious.
I'm just wondering.
Well, maybe.
All right, you left it very open-ended. Thank you. The last season of Silicon Valley, a huge hit for HBO over the last several years, and it starts on Sunday, I believe, right, Alex? Silicon Valley's last season, yeah?
Yeah, this is right before Mrs. Fletcher at 10 p.m. This is a merciless parody of everything that's happened in Silicon Valley. Our reviewer, Kayla Cobb, wrote a very nice piece previewing the final sixth season, and not to be too epic about it, but she compared it almost to Shakespearean tragedy. And it's a lot like that, where it's just this main character who's a hapless Mark Zuckerberg type who's accidentally created a tech empire. And over the course of the series, he's lost all of his friends. He's lost all of his trust. He's lost his morals. And we're probably going to see him completely and utterly alone at the end of the series, which is really sad. But Mike Judge and company who have created the show make sure it is funny every single episode out of the gate. So I'm excited / nervous to see how it ends. But if it's anything like Veep, which was very much of the same time period, I think it's going to end really well.
I've never seen it at all. Have you, Bill?
I've not seen it, and I have so much respect for the people who are in it and behind the scenes. I don't know why I'm not watching it, but yeah, everybody who's watched it has loved it. So it's sad that the show is ending, but like you said, it's ending on a high note, so that's good news.
Yeah, I think so. Then the cast is great.
And never too late to watch something. Like, you can go back and binge it and watch it. That's what I'm hoping to do.
Alex, yeah. Let's review a couple shows you've talked about in the past few weeks that I've been lucky enough to see, and I've agreed with you all the way. One of them is Living With Yourself. That's the Paul Rudd show that mm-hmm. started last week on Netflix. Boy, is that entertaining. I love that.
Yeah, it's super fun, and just Paul Rudd is very charming throughout. You know, it's funny, he did a promotional thing on the show Hot Ones, the talk show online where they go out and they eat hot wings and they talk about stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that has become to promote Living With Yourself, and that has become a bigger hit, I think, than Living With Yourself, because it's ridiculous and over the top, and people have been memeing little bits of it. But if you have a chance, if you saw the Hot Ones clip, go and check out the actual show itself, because you get two Paul Rudds
yeah.
mixing it up. The main female star, I'm going to pronounce her name wrong, but it's something like Aisling B. She's great and engaging as well, and you know, holds her own against Paul Rudd the entire time. It's a fun show.
The other show I want to bring up is, and I know I'm not the target audience for this show by far, but Modern Love is fantastic.
Yeah, that one is really trucking along, and it actually just got picked up for a second season Good. By Prime Video, so you're definitely going to be seeing more of it with more stars. Like we talked about last week, everybody that I've talked to has liked or disliked a different episode. You know, there was one episode with Julia Garner and Shea Wingham, which gave me the creeps.
Yeah.
But one of our other writers, Megan O'Keefe, wrote a very good piece about how she felt like it played out like a horror movie, and that was on purpose the way that the director directed it. So it's been a fascinating one to talk about. There's great rom-coms throughout. There's different stories throughout. And, of course, if you're going in for the stars, you're going to get tons
Big
of them.
Stars.
Where is that? I don't even know what Modern Love is.
It's on Prime, on Amazon Prime. It's an anthology series. It's a different half-hour love story every week. So I read an article where somebody said, I dare you to watch episode 2, that's the Dev Patel episode, and not cry. Oh. And I said, well, let's give that a shot.
I was crying
during the opening credits. I started crying. Couldn't help myself.
That episode is absolutely my favorite one across the board. I think the performances are so wonderful in it. The storytelling is great. But like I said, different people have preferred different things. There's one episode that's about Anne Hathaway dealing with bipolar disorder that I think is extremely well done as well. And that's almost not really about dating relationships at all. So it's a really cool, interesting series to check out.
Just a couple of quick texts, or one or two anyway. Let's see how many I can get in. Dead to Me, is that coming back? That's the Ricky Gervais series, correct?
Dead to Me is not the Ricky Gervais series.
Christina Applegate.
Right.
That was a huge hit for Netflix, and that is coming back for a second season.
All right, that's good news. Alex, fun to talk to you. Thanks for all the gossip. I know you don't usually go that way. You're better than that, but thank you for providing that today.
No, I'm doing that from now on. Check me out at Keith-Davidson Tracker.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Alex. It's Alex Zalbin from Decider.com. A little break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy WGN. Thank you, Jen. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Mike McNamara and Wendy Jo Carlton here to talk about a new movie, Good Kisser, which Wendy has described as hot.
It's very hot.
The last movie Wendy described as hot was The Incredible Mr. Limpet many years ago.
That's an underrated movie.
Yeah, and hot. So hot. How are you guys? Good to see both of you again.
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having us.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Tell us about this hot movie, this Good Kisser. What should we know?
It's a beautiful film. I was just honored to be a co-producer on it and help my friend Wendy Jo Carlton here bring it all together. Another Chicagoan, Patrick Burrell, came on board as one of the main investors and put together this film. It's hot. I'll turn it over to Wendy Jo for that. But the beautiful thing is 75% of this whole cast and crew is either female or LGBTQ, or as Wendy will tell you, both. Yeah. And it's just an awesome
great
team effort. It's a family that came together and made this film. And Wendy, tell them about the heat.
Well, this is a lesbian love triangle. It's a love story.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is about also, like, how does desire work?
Mm-hmm.
How does magnetic attraction work? And they each take turns. I love round robin. I love love triangles, period.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of gender. And it's also about self-esteem. And I won't tell you too many details about that, but it's about self-esteem. And everything happens in one night between these three women. And Jenna, our protagonist, played by Carrie Allison Hodge, she is convinced by her girlfriend to try this threesome with this mysterious older woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's a little reluctant and nervous and awkward. And I love writing those kind of characters. And then her girlfriend, Kate, is played by Rachel Paulson, who happens to be Sarah Paulson's younger sister. And they're great together. And chemistry is great between all three.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of go along for the ride.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Two's company, three's a crowd. There's always somebody who feels left out, isn't there? Do we witness some of that in this?
You do. And
always
it's delicious.
Happens. Not
it's
speaking delicious. From experience.
It always looks good on paper.
Right.
It always looks good on paper.
Yeah.
I had a relationship that crumbled because from the jump, we were like, let's have a threesome. And then you're like, that sounds great.
Yeah.
We love each other and we'll, you know, then someone else is involved. And then before you know it, talk about self-esteem, we were like, once you actually are like, okay, let's find somebody, then it kind of
changes
the energy
things.
Changes. Things
well, it's
change.
Exponential. It's not just three anymore. It's
each
it's
combo.
Beyond.
That's true.
When you're directing a story that has that as a centerpiece, a love triangle, are you in some way making it so that the audience should decide or is deciding which of the two they hope end up together and who's the odd person out or not?
Yeah, that's
you
the
are
fun.
Doing that.
That's the fun. That's the challenge of it in writing the script and telling the story, then directing the actors, right? It's like, because they bring their own interpretations as well, right? And they add juice to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love in this movie, in Good Kisser, I think people will enjoy relating to each of the three main characters at turns for different reasons.
And you'll see it tonight. This is the coolest thing is we're here in Chicago. Wendy Jo's been in Chicago for a long time. Spent about 10, 20 years building her career here. You guys know I'm born and raised here. So we're having our theatrical premiere tonight at the Siskel.
Not a bad place to have it.
Beautiful spot. And then we're there through October 31st.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't call this a Halloween film, but you know what?
Well,
there is
emotions
some tricking
can
and
be
treating.
Scary. Right. Emotions can be scary.
So true. Good selling
there are
point.
Lots of tricks and treats.
Great timing
in this
on the selling
film.
Point. But you've shown the movie previously in Seattle.
Yeah, the world premiere was at Seattle International Film Festival in June, which was great because it's a mainstream film festival.
Uh-huh.
And then a lot of this film festival circuit is LGBTQ film festivals. There are a ton of great global film fests for LGBTQ content.
Yeah.
But to premiere there also gives it a little more cachet.
Mm-hmm. What was the feedback you were getting from the Seattle audiences that were seeing this movie that you didn't expect? Were people telling you things you go, oh, that's interesting. I'm behind it, but I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Well, a few things that stick out to me is people are like, oh, it's funny. It's funnier than I thought it would be. It's got these awkward moments. It's got relatable moments. And a gentleman in Toronto, a film reviewer, he came out as straight to me on our interview.
Hmm.
He's like,
that doesn't always happen.
I'm a straight married man, and I loved Good Kisser. Here's why I love Good Kisser. And he proceeded to talk 10 minutes about what he relates to, about the awkwardness, about nervousness of the protagonist, and things that are really believable. And he said, so it's not just about the erotic tension. It's that, but it's also these human things.
Yeah.
Just it. Human things that we can all relate to. It doesn't matter which sex we prefer.
Right.
It's the same feelings that we're all getting.
Right.
That's got to be a compliment to you, though, that a mainstream straight, as he said, person was behind it like that. That's great.
Exactly. And you want that as a filmmaker. And if you're me, and a lot of the stories I write are female protag or queer protagonist, because there's still so much more to be done. Like, there's so much more content that needs to be made and supported for that. Because there is a particular experience of that, too. So I've had lesbian women, queer women, gay women come up to me and also say, I rarely see myself portrayed with this complexity and nuance. You can do the broad strokes, but I'm trying to go into the finer strokes, to speak.
Right.
And that's really when you love a film, is when you can see yourself in these characters.
Yep.
The beauty of Good Kisser, tonight at Siskel, is there's different points where you can see yourself as all three of these characters. As the older woman, Julie Erringer, who's kind of the mischievous one of the bunch, as, you know, Carrie Allison Hodge, who plays the shy one, or as the girlfriend, Rachel Paulson, who's really trying to kind of push the situation.
Yeah.
You can see yourself in each of those roles at some point, whether you're straight, queer, what have you. And it's just a fun ride because the power dynamic keeps shifting over the course of the film.
Yeah, that's what I love to write about.
That's Mike
Imbalance.
Mike McNamara is here, actor, filmmaker, producer of Good Kisser, and Wendy Jo Carlton, award-winning writer, director, and director of Good Kisser. I got to ask you this question because I cringed when you said the word queer. When is that? How has that become acceptable again?
Well, it's acceptable within LGBT communities for years. It's kind of like I can call myself queer, but if you're not identified as gay. I like the word queer personally because it means more than sexual orientation or attraction. To me, it also means I'm politically aware. I don't quite fit into standard boxes, quote unquote. I'm an artist.
Yeah.
Because it was weird. I cringed a little bit when I heard that word. I don't hear it as frequently, and now it's been used again.
Yeah.
As an adjective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, and I mean, you have whole events that, I mean, we played at Seattle Queer Fest. I mean, that's
the festival's
I can go
that.
To Seattle Queer Fest. What you know, if you're gay or straight, what have you, you can go to that. You know, there's events in L.A., Chicago. Queer cinema is like the name of the screening series. So, yeah, it has it's one of those words that, me growing up, if I heard that, I would cringe like you. But now it has come back in. It's been embraced and it's become empowerment. And like you said, it includes.
By queer identified people, right?
Right. Yeah,
of course.
So it's like you can call yourself that. It can mean anything you want it to mean.
Yeah, right.
You know, and again, as an adjective, it's like, for me personally, I like saying sometimes a lesbian woman, because I don't like the noun.
Oh, yes.
I don't like being nouned.
A lesbian,
Gay men, that's an adjective.
Right.
That's a good
point. It's a learning process, right? And the results need to be posted somewhere on a wall so we can all...
It's organic.
But can I tell you, if you don't talk about it, then we
then
don't know
don't
about
know.
It. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. Sit tight for a moment. We'll come back. We have more to discuss. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Our guests are Mike McNamara and Wendy Jo Carlson talking about this movie, Good Kisser, at the Siskel, the Gene Siskel Film Center. Tonight, Q&A following. It's an 8 o'clock start, and then a Q&A following, correct?
8:30 tonight.
8:30 tonight.
Oh, yeah. Is so all the show times are at, what's the Siskel? Fiskel.
The Fiskel.
164.
Fiskel. It's good that you mentioned Fiskel, because this theatrical run means a lot to us financially. It's our first theatrical run, so we really got to pack the house. So there's sometimes people are like, I'll catch it on Netflix, I'll catch it on Vimeo. This is the time where you need to buy tickets and come out to the theater. You can go to SiskelFilmCenter.org and this is the time to buy tickets.
So basically there's 8 show times.
Yeah.
There's 2 p.m. today is the very first one, then there's 8:30 tonight. Then every night, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it's just either a 5 p.m. or an 8 p.m. And they've alternated them at the theater. So you could just take a looky-loo at the website.
I love that you do the Q&A after the nighttime performances. I wish they did a Q&A after every movie that's shown anywhere.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you learn so... I mean, you get the basics of the movie when watching the movie, but then you understand it better by talking to the director or the writer or the star, don't you think?
Or the composer.
Yeah.
In Seattle, I had the composer there with us, and people can then ask, oh, there's the actual human artist talent behind. Oh, how did she come up with that, you know, violin? Yeah. How did you guys make that happen? You can actually talk to everybody about the process.
Deeper experience.
Yep.
Right? Yeah.
Do you get really good questions from people?
A lot of great questions.
Not here.
Yeah, well, of course.
It's one of the most fun things as an independent filmmaker to bring a feature around the world and be with live audiences post-screening. And Good Kisser is just, it's a 77-minute movie. So it's not a two-hour movie. It's like you're in, you're out.
Yeah.
It's very dense with emotions and fun and sexiness. Mm-hmm. And then it's over. And the Q&A with audiences is one of my favorite things, because it's like I was telling Bill that every screening is its own assembly of humanity between who showed up to see this experience in this story world and then who's there to say hello to me. And then they ask technical questions, but also character questions like, oh, you know, I just hate Kate. I just can't. Did you mean to write her as such a villain? And I'm like, yeah.
If somebody hates something that you've written, you've succeeded, haven't you?
Yeah. It's totally satisfying when someone loves or hates one of your characters. Yeah.
Go back to the love triangle aspect for just a little bit. That's been a common theme in books and plays and movies forever. So what did you draw upon? What did you remember seeing in your lifetime that you went, that's an angle I really want to explore more?
Well, I've Are you wondering if I've had a threesome? Because
I wasn't wondering that, but if you want to divulge, okay.
I'll just say no, but always no. But, you know, am I lying? No.
What have you been exposed to?
I've had love triangles that were emotional love triangles, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think a lot more women than men, whether you're gay, straight, whatever. We pick up, in general, stereotypes, not a stereotype, it's a tendency, okay?
Yeah.
As a female in this world and growing up in this culture, my experience is there are nuances and subtleties of emotion that women pick up amongst each other, whether you are physically attracted, romantically attracted, or not at all, you're picking up things. And I think a lot of that's is both perhaps in our DNA, but a lot of it is enculturated. Right? We're on guard. We have to be more aware about a lot of things. And a superpower can come out of that, though.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, intuition.
Yeah, I was going to say more intuitive.
And picking up emotional cues and all kinds of stuff like that. And I love to write about that. And I write that for male characters, too.
Mm-hmm.
And trans characters, don't get me wrong. But my focus right now is like with Good Kisser, it's three lesbian women in this movie.
Do you find that men or women or gay characters or straight characters, is there a bigger propensity to have a guilt aspect to that love triangle, or do they all play it the same?
No guilt aspect.
No guilt.
No more than anyone else. But I traffic in emotional complexity and awkwardness and what it feels like to be afraid to be rejected, but you're still showing up.
Right.
That's kind of what's happening for Jenna in this movie.
Yeah.
That's brave.
It's very brave.
It really is courageous.
What are you working on next? Do you know yet?
I have a script. It's a feature called Yellow Belt, and it's the elevator pitch. It's not really a pitch. I'm still working on it. But it's an feminist urban adventure set in Seattle at a climate change conference, and the oceanographer, the scientist lead, is there to deliver evidence of something when her bag is stolen.
Timely.
That is very timely.
Very timely.
And there's some martial arts and all, and it all gets going.
You know, Bruce Lee grew up in Seattle, so I'm fascinated with the martial arts background of that's what the title is, Yellow Belt, because the protag, that's what she has.
Yeah.
But she's also, she gets kicked out of her Groupon karate class, so that's as far as she got.
A yellow belt, I think. I think it was white,
yellow,
orange.
Everybody's a yellow belt. Right. Everyone's a yellow belt at some point.
Yeah. begins with white by the second class. You're hopefully yellow.
Yeah.
They want to keep you coming back, so they're like, no, you're a yellow belt.
Right.
How do I get that blue one? 7 years.
Right.
It'll take you 7 years.
It's really about, you know, how most of us could probably relate to being, I could have been a contender.
Right. Oh, I gotcha.
That's at the heart of this.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
For getting this done. That's a big doing. It's Good Kisser at the Gene Siskel Film Center.
It's hot.
Yeah.
It's hot. Wendy Snyder says this movie's hot. If you have a reason to
put
see
that
it,
that on
it
the poster.
Is.
Just
go
one
ahead.
Big word. Hot. 8:30 tonight at the Siskel. And then we're there every night through Halloween, through October 31st. But this is one. Come out. Buy that ticket. Support this film. And you're going to enjoy the heck out of it.
Website,
just go to SiskelFilmCenter.org, right around the corner downtown.
And GoodKisserMovie.com.
Yep.
Excellent. Wendy Jo, thank you. Mike, thank you. Appreciate it. A break, and then we'll turn things over. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And coming up next, the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.